Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, August 6, 2015. The IGAD Plus talks open today in Addis Ababa with hope that this time the two warring parties will finally sign a peace deal.
Fighting in South Sudan, which has already led to humanitarian catastrophe, must have an immediate end. In particular, the people in the refugee camps urgently need help and they need to return to their homelands.
And the editor of the Citizen newspaper says he'll have to lay off scores of workers if the government refuses to lift its media crackdown.
It is terrible. We cannot continue until the end of the month. So the board of directors will sit within these days to consider a termination of the contract of the 78 people who are working with us.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. What have been called the last chance peace talks for South Sudan are getting underway in Addis this hour. The talks are being led by East African bloc IGAD, but with an expanded mediation team that includes the United States and its troika partners, the United Kingdom and Norway, the European Union, the United Nations, the African Union, five African nations, and China. IGAD lead negotiator Sayoum Mesfin opened the talks with a plea to the warring parties to be open to compromise so that peace can finally return to South Sudan after 20 months of conflict.
Excellencies, making peace or war are both choices that we can make. But war, as I have noted above, has horrid consequences, while peacemaking is equally immensely difficult. In our world, perfect solution to problem like that of the ongoing crisis in South Sudan are impossible to achieve. Compromise solutions are, however, reachable.
After the last round of talks ground to a halt in early March without an agreement, IGAD crafted what it calls a compromise deal for South Sudan. The agreement seeks to share power between President Salva Kiir's government and the main armed opposition group in the conflict, led by former Vice President Riek Machar. Both sides have rejected parts of the deal, but are in Addis to try to hammer out an agreement by the August 17th deadline set by the mediators. The government and rebel negotiators' opening statements did little to raise hopes that the path to a final peace deal will be a smooth one. Government lead negotiator Niall Deng Niall said it is incomprehensible that IGAD is asking the government to cede control of the Greater Upper Nile region to Machar's SPLM-MIN opposition.
What we were definitely not prepared for was IGAD's abrupt and ill-conceived decision that control of the three states of Jonglei, Yiridi, and Upper Nile be handed over to the SPLM in opposition on a silver platter. These are states that the armed rebellion desperately seeks to take over militarily, and in the single-minded pursuit of this objective, the rebellion has caused us the loss of many precious lives among both the civil population and the military on both sides. So for those who have made immense sacrifices in order to keep the SPLM-A in opposition at bay in those states, it is utterly incomprehensible that they are now being asked to seek control of those areas to Riek Machar at the negotiating table.
Opposition lead negotiator Taban Deng Gai fired back, calling President Kiir's government illegitimate.
I would like to bring to the attention of the mediators and the South Sudanese stakeholders that I'm negotiating with a government that has lost its legitimacy as of July 8, 2015. Hence, it cannot continue to claim legitimacy to deserve that special advantage in power sharing.
In addition to the government and rebel negotiators, representatives of former political detainees, civil society and women's groups, and religious leaders from South Sudan are all at the talks. Meanwhile, in Juba, members of South Sudan's opposition parties were prevented from leaving the capital to attend those talks in Addis. Lama Cole, chairman of the opposition's National Alliance and leader of the main opposition SPLM-DC party, says officials are becoming increasingly repressive towards any institution or individual individual that criticizes the government. Lamicole says 7 members of the National Alliance had their bags checked and were cleared through immigration at Juba International Airport when they were stopped by police just minutes before boarding the plane to Addis.
A police officer with the rank of major approached us, and then he told us that he has directives from the president that leaders of political parties should not be allowed to travel unless they have permission from the presidency.
Akol says the officer did not present a letter detailing those directives, but the opposition politicians chose to simply comply anyway. This is not the first time Akol and leaders of opposition parties have been stopped from traveling to Ethiopia to participate in the peace process. Akol was first prevented from leaving Juba in September of last year. He says IGAD mediators are aware of what took place at the airport today. The German embassy and others have criticized the government's action in statements released today. Akol says he's not surprised and he and his colleagues were blocked from boarding the plane, even though they've received official invitations from IGAD.
I had expected the government to do that, but if you don't appear in the airport, they will say they just did not come. So we did that in order to close any excuse for the government.
Akol says the government's claim of being committed to ending the war through dialogue cannot be taken seriously if other stakeholders are not allowed to participate in the peace process.
The government seems to be thinking that it can settle the matter on the ground, which I don't think so. The government knows and everybody knows, especially us who were in the guerrilla movement so recently. We know that you cannot defeat a guerrilla movement.
Akol says government repression of critical voices, including closing several media outlets, as it did over this past week, is a blatant sign of intolerance.
It is very clear that the government now is getting restive. It is not, is lacking confidence in itself. And this is why it is resorting on old avenues of other point of view. It is closing the media because the media can allow the other point of view to be expressed. It is against the political parties that are not supporting it to participate in the peace talks. So it appears that the government is increasingly getting isolated and therefore it cannot tolerate any difference of opinion.
Akol says he and parties under the National Alliance are hoping that IGAD mediators will pressure President Kiir's government to lift the travel ban and enable them to attend those talks. Efforts to reach President Kiir's spokesperson were unsuccessful, despite several telephone calls to the office today. Philip Thon Aleu prepared that report in Juba. Newspaper owners and vendors say the closure of 2 daily newspapers by South Sudan's National Security Service is hitting them hard. The National Security Service shut down the English-language Citizen newspaper on Tuesday and El Rai, which is popular with Arabic speakers, on Saturday. The Citizen's editor-in-chief, Niall Bol, says the closure of the newspaper has already cost his media group thousands in lost revenues.
So far, we have lost over 50,000 SSP in the last 3 days, and that is about $17,000. And more losses are coming, leave alone the losses of Manning, but also our subscribers are really worried.
Bol says unless the paper is allowed to resume publication, he will have to lay off scores of employees, leaving them unable to support their families.
It is terrible. We cannot continue until the end of the month. So the board of directors will sit within these days to consider a termination of the contract of the 78 people who are working with us. Until Monday, we will make this decision clear to the workers.
Bol says the closure of his and other newspapers also deprives around 1,000 vendors of their source of income.
We are going to have 1,000 people without bread. They will not continue their normal life. And this is a very serious issue because some of these vendors, they are actually student universities. And I really regret why the government is creating hardship to its own citizens.
22-year-old Lotto Solomon sells newspapers in Juba's custom market. Before the Citizen was shut down, Lotto used to sell between 30 and 50 copies of the paper daily. He earned one South Sudanese pound for each sale.
For us, the vendors really affect our work, whereby we can sell Citizen newspaper more better than any other papers. As a vendor, the more you sell, the more you get.
Joseph Cole sells papers in the same market. The 23-year-old says many Arabic speakers bought El Rai from him, but the Citizen was his main source of income. He sold around 30 copies of the Citizen each day, compared to only 10 copies of other papers.
This problem has affected us, the vendors and the buyers, because the readers have lost information, because newspapers have a lot of benefits. Those who read get a lot of information about the country, and we, the vendors, will benefit from the news and money because life in the city is difficult.
Joel says selling newspapers is his only source of income. With 20 months of conflict leaving South Sudan's economy on extremely shaky ground, Joel says he doesn't know what he would do for a living if the shutdown continues for much longer. That report was compiled by Waki Simon Wudu and Gift Friday in Juba. The ban on the Citizen, El Rai, and the Free Voice Media Group, which was also shut down this past week, is drawing angry reactions from citizens around South Sudan. In western Bahar al-Ghazal, some citizens are saying the government crackdown on the media is stifling their access to information. Others say the government should be cracking down not on the media, but on industries that harm South Sudanese. Dimo Silva Ariello reports from Wau.
Many people in Wau were critical of the decision to shut down the Citizen and Al Rai newspapers, but few of them were willing to publicly voice their anger over the shutdown because they feared they might be targeted for government retribution. One woman in Wau who agreed to speak on the record as long as she was not identified had strong words for the government about the latest crackdown on the media.
Personally, the closure of two media houses is really a violation to human rights, because the government itself, instead of listening to people and see what is really going on around their administration or their mismanagement, the government even go further by authorizing the closure of the newspaper that were very important for people to express their feelings.
Others, like Akech Philip, a fourth-year student in the University of Bahr al-Ghazal, were less harsh on the government, but still called for the ban on the media groups to be reversed.
I used to read this newspaper called Citizen. It is a little bit objective. For the last 2 days, the publication did not roughen just because of the shutdown. The media houses should not be contrary. We need to follow journalism ethics and professionalism so that journalists report accurately and objectively on issues that concern the current situation in the country.
Recent university graduate Lazarus Agag says that by banning the newspapers from publishing and Free Voice from broadcasting, the government is violating the terms of the media laws that President Kiir signed last year.
To my surprise, it is not a good thing that, you know, the government is on one hand trying to push that, you know, press or what we so-called the journalism bill within the Legislative Assembly. And on the other hand, there are some, you know, newspapers or that newspaper which has been so much, you know, following the events from day one to where they are, you know, for the good of the society. So my opinion, I'm not feeling good about what happened to that newspaper.
Juba resident Henry Daniel David says if the government is concerned with improving the lives of its citizens, it should not be shutting down the media, but another industry.
We want to tell the government it is better to close the lodges or bars or hotels where sex workers or ladies sell their bodies. This is what should be closed. Leave the newspapers alone. Newspapers do nothing that can destroy the people. Let the press be free to write what they want to write with truth.
For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio reporting from Wau.
Waki Simon Wudu contributed to that report from Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Journalists talk about their survival diplomacy in times of government repression. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
How should children be disciplined?
For me, I believe stroking, because even the Bible says, spare the rod, spoil the child. I think stroking in Africa is what we've all grown up being until a particular age. Past a particular age, like the teenage years into puberty, there you go to counseling and you'll really help the child.
Through listening to them, talking to them, and not caning them. If you cane them, they'll rebel.
Personally, I think we should discipline our children through counseling. You counsel them on the right ways to adopt, on the right ways to follow.
For example, if they make a mistake, you should call them. You sit with them, tell them this is what you did is bad, by just talking to the child.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Owners of media houses in South Sudan describe the media crackdown by security forces as threatening, aimed at weakening media outlets. Alfred Taban, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor, one of the leading English dailies in the country, says government officials should reconsider their move, arguing South Sudanese media have an important role to play in helping to restore long-lasting peace to the country. Taban says he's always prepared for a shutdown to happen at any time. He says he strives to ensure that his reporters practice the highest standards of journalistic integrity. At the same time, he says his paper is ready if security officials come knocking.
Ensuring that it responds to complaints of the security, we always ensure that if we are summoned by the security, we go, you know, and then hear to their complaints.
Emmanuel Tombe is the deputy director of Bakita Radio, which operates in Juba. Tombe says the station has a different focus than other stations to disseminate the word of God. He says Bakita also makes sure that its reporters are apprised of the current media situation in the country, and he says management ensures that its journalists are equipped
with several trainings on security measures and media laws that has been contributed by the Union of the Journalists and together with the Association of Media Development, AMDIS, in South Sudan.
But those media laws have done little to protect stations and newspapers from being shut down if the government does not like what they're reporting. Again, Alfred Taban.
The government has often complained about the stories that we have carried. They actually don't like stories to be balanced. They want the government to put across each side of the story, and they don't want these stories to be balanced by what the opposition says.
Some might think Taban would enjoy seeing his competitors closed down, at least temporarily. He says nothing could be further from the truth.
The readers always like to compare and contrast news. They want to read the Citizen, they want to read the Juba Monitor, and they want to read other newspapers as well. So this is not really a long-term benefit to Juba Monitor. It is a disaster to freedom of the press.
Despite the crackdown, Taban is calling on media houses to continue delivering fair and balanced news to the citizens of South Sudan. He says the people deserve to know what others are saying about the peace process, information that they can only get from the media.
I also call on the authorities, particularly the security, that they should really allow the South Sudanese people to talk at this critical time. This is the time when we want to know the opinion and views of the people, because this is a time for dialogue, time for negotiations. It's not a time for shutting up newspapers.
That's Alfred Taban, editor-in-chief of the Juba Monitor newspaper. Waki Simon Wudu compiled that report from Juba. Amnesty International has released a new report describing what it calls 4 years of unrelenting attacks against civilians in Sudan's South Kordofan state. The civilian casualties result from 4 years of conflict between the Khartoum government and the Sudan People's Liberation Army North. Amnesty says hundreds have been killed and thousands injured. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The report, called Don't We Matter, says many of the attacks targeted civilian areas, without warning and without legitimate military targets. It says people living in rebel-controlled areas have endured an unrelenting campaign of aerial and ground attacks by the Sudan Armed Forces, and that during the last 4 years, there have been military offensives by one or both parties to the conflict, which have increased the dangers faced by civilians. Yagoa Toot is Amnesty International's country campaigner for Sudan and South Sudan. She says one characteristic of the conflict, especially in areas controlled by the SPLA North, has been the use of ground shelling and aerial bombardments against civilians.
Between January and April, 374 bombs fell in civilian populated areas of South Kordofan. This has injured about 70 people and also killed 30 people. But other than what has happened between January and April, hundreds of people have died as a result of this conflict. Thousands others have been injured as a result of this conflict as well.
In April 2014, Sudan launched a military offensive called Decisive Summer.
A characteristic of Decisive Summer has been attacks against civilian areas, not only on SPLA North positions, but in civilian areas and where civilians are living. People say that if they are bombing hospitals, then there is nowhere else the Sudanese air forces are not going to attack.
Amnesty accuses Sudan of violating international humanitarian and human rights laws. Toot says Khartoum has blocked humanitarian access to rebel-held areas.
So for instance, last year, between May 2014 and January 2015, there was a measles outbreak in the region. Children in SPLA North-controlled areas did not have access to much-needed vaccines. They were being distributed by UNICEF and WHO in other parts of Sudan.
She says Amnesty has had difficulty confirming allegations of abuse by rebels because the government has denied access to SPLA North-controlled areas. However, other organizations have accused the rebels of violating rights laws in government-held regions. The rebels do not have warplanes. Toot alleges cluster bombs are being dropped by government planes.
We documented that MIG fighter jets and Antonovs are being used to drop cluster munitions. The cluster bomb is several bomblets put into one. They either explode on impact or might not explode on impact. In several areas of South Kordofan, there are bits of these bombs that have not exploded. So children have also been killed. We've documented several children who've been playing with what they call shiny objects, only to end up losing a limb or even dying from this.
Toot says civilians try to protect themselves.
One of the most remarkable things is the resilience and the courage of people living in these areas. All over SPLA North-controlled areas, there have been foxholes that have been dug in the schools, near hospitals, near homes, and this is where civilians tend to hide. In other areas where there are caves and crevices, then civilians go to these areas. Unfortunately, even these foxholes and caves are not safe sometimes.
She says the resilience of civilians in South Kordofan should inspire international action to end the conflict and bring those responsible for abuses to justice. Part of that, she says, would be to extend the UN arms embargo in Darfur to South Kordofan and Blue Nile State, which is also part of the conflict. Khartoum has accused rebels of hiding in civilian areas and thus attracting bombing attacks.
In places where the bombs were falling, there were no military targets near these places. There were no SPLA North positions in the civilian areas. So we have not found evidence supporting what the Sudanese government is saying, that these areas are being used by the SPLA North.
Toot says there's no difference between a cluster bomb used in Syria and one used in South Kordofan. The Sudanese government has denied several times it uses the weapons. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Back to South Sudan now. In northern Bahar El Ghazal state, lawmakers there are trying to fire the state minister of youth, culture and sports. They say Angwe Dingding is absent most of the time and does not do his job. Abraham Agoth has a story for VOA from Awil.
Northern Bahar El Ghazal state members of parliament issued three summons requesting state minister Ding to appear in person before the assembly and provide explanations for his frequent absences from office. Ding did not respond verbally or in writing to those summons issued in June and August. Lawmakers voted unanimously in favor of a resolution recommending his dismissal from the office on Tuesday. All 34 state assembly members who were present voted for his impeachment. Ashak Thiap Thiap, spokesperson for the state's Transitional Legislative Assembly, says lawmakers have lost confidence in Ding and were legally obliged to dismiss him.
According to
Article 78 of Northern Barkazal Transitional Constitution said any person who refuses to appear before the assembly or any of its committee, refuse to produce any document or require under Article 1, sub-article 1, commit an offence punishable by law. So, according to this article, Assembly of Northern Barkazal passed the resolution after Samoon, Honorable Minister, three times, and he refused to answer or to appear before the August House. The resolution was passed by the Assembly, and mostly that from today, Honorable Minister Angun Ding Ding is to stop from the office as the Minister of Culture, Youth and Sport.
Lawmakers also accused him of failure to properly plan and provide service delivery in Northern Barkazal, such as creating jobs for youth who graduated from universities. Thiep says members of the State Assembly are prepared to take similar measures against other ministers whose performance is lackluster. He says Minister of Social Development Ajaka Kokwel and Awiltown Mayor Jacqueline Nyubol Benjamin are their next targets.
He did not present his ministry policy according to 2014-2015 budget, and also there is no any activities in the ministry, and that's why Assembly decided to summon him, and he refused to appear before the August House. And it is our mandate to ask or to supervise any ministry who is delivering the services to the people of Northern Barkazal. And we will still remain to ask anybody or any minister who is holding the public office and he refused to sit in the office, like the town mayor and the rest of the ministry, like Minister of Social Development.
Thiep says Ajak failed to outline her policies or provide service to the citizens. Minister Ajak could not be reached for comments as she is out of the country. State lawmaker William Weldeng says the assembly will now wait to hear from acting caretaker governor Salva Shola Yat to implement the resolution to impeach Minister Ding.
We are going to include the governor because the governor is the implementer agent. Because when we file the resolution, again, is any member of the executive is the one that can implement the resolution. Like now, we ban him from receiving the salary. And these are to be implemented by the governor. And if he insists things, then this is where we are going to court.
Deng says if necessary, members of the State Assembly will go to court to fire ministers and the mayor of Awil. Minister Deng is traveling out of the state and could not be reached for comment. For VOA News, I am Abraham Goth reporting in Awil.
That's our show for this Thursday. We'll leave you with the song Mama Mama by Colonel Mito. You've been listening to Colonel Mito and the song Mama Mama. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.